Now, similar to last Sunday's parable, the parable that is told today is famous for what it can't possibly mean. And I have to set the stage, in fact, in the same way. Our son, Simeon, emailed me the other day, and he said it's the big joke in the history and lit department where he studies that you say, well, it works well in practice, so it can't possibly be true in theory. That's great. That's what they laugh about in university settings. You have to understand. Anyway, the thing about this parable is it can't possibly mean what it at first sight appears to mean, because it at first sight appears to reward the plucky and adventurous risk takers among you and diss the timid, timorous, hanging back, shrinking flowers among you. And that, do you remember that? What happens in the parable? A man gets 5 talents. Just call them talents. You don't need to translate it. Somebody else gets 2 talents, and a third fellow gets 1 talent. The man with the 5, you know, goes off to Australia, the equivalent, and makes a lot of money, and comes back, and he's done well. And, you know, Quigley down under. And number 2, the guy also doubles his money, actually, and comes back and is rewarded for his adventuresome spirit. But the third man, who just received 1 talent, is afraid, and he buries the talent in the ground. And when the master comes back, who's supposedly God, clearly God, the master says, you a foolish servant. What's going on? And he says, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you do not sow. So I was afraid, and I put my talent in the ground. And he says, you idiot, I do reap where I do not sow, and I do gather where I have not withered, but you should have invested it. And then a fearful rebuke occurs. Now, it looks like it's a... Well, do you remember those T-shirts a couple years ago that were really big? They said, have no fear, absolutely no fear. I don't know if you remember them, but now they're out. They're uncool, like Guns N' Roses is getting again. And they have no fear. And that was a terrible thing. Because what if you couldn't help yourself? What if you couldn't help yourself with your fear? What if you're an anxious person? What if some particular thing throws you into a paroxysm of worry? And somebody comes up and says, oh, you shouldn't worry. You're such a worrier. You worry about everything. You don't need to be afraid. After all, I don't worry about what I can't change. And therefore, shouldn't you stop being such a worrywart? Here's a shirt. that's commonly called the law. It actually makes me, I threw that shirt away rapidly because I would sleep in it and just think about it. And so what happened is... it can't mean what it does. It can't mean that this is a message for people who are not inhibited by all sorts of constraining fears and worries. Why can't it mean that? Because Jesus spent a lot of time with such people. The woman with the issue of blood was so fearful that she couldn't even look him in the eye, and she had to creep up to him in a huge crowd and not even tell what was going on. She was so scared. And yet she was healed. And Jesus said, your faith has made you well. Similarly, Zacchaeus was afraid to deal with Jesus directly. So he crawled up into a tree. And he tried to do business from a distance. And we know that Jesus specifically said, I did not come to quench the dimly burning wick. Others may blow out your candle, Laura. You know, that's all Tennessee Williams. Blow out your candles, Laura, with your ridiculous fantasies of gentlemen callers. But Jesus was not in the business of blowing out the candles of Tennessee Williams' martyred heroines. He was in the business of loving them and not being a hard man. So we know it can't mean what it sounds like. Are you with me? It can't mean that life belongs to those who take the risks. You know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Remember that? Wasn't there a song? Anyway, I thought there was a song. It would be elitist, and it would be divisive, and it would be completely contrary to the spirit of Jesus, who works with dimly burning wicks from A to Z. So it can't mean what it appears at first sight to mean. What does it mean? The key occurs in the exchange between the timid servant and the returning master. Now, if you would, listen carefully. The servant says, "Master," this is verse 24, "I knew you to be a hard man, reaping what you do not sow and gathering where you do not winnow." In other words, you're a puzzle. You're a hard man and you're a puzzle. "So I was afraid and I went and I hid my talent in the ground." The master repeated back the words, but he left something out. The master said, "You wicked servant, you know that I reap where I have not sowed and gather where I have not winnowed. You ought to have." Now, did you notice a difference between what the servant perceived about the master and what the master said about himself? This is how you study the Bible, by the way. This is how you do it. This is a perfect example of how you study the Bible at home. What's the difference between what the servant said about the master and what the master said about himself? He left out a sentence. The master did not say he was a hard man. The servant said, "I know you are a hard man." The master simply said, "I reap where I have not sowed." What's missing is the phrase, "You are a hard man," because God is not a hard man. If you remember anything from what I'm saying, God is not a hard man. Now think about this for a minute. Are you married to a hard man? Now, a hard man is someone who notices everything and is basically critical. And you come home, and or are you married to a hard woman? You come home after a very full day of whatever it is you're doing, and what do you get when you get home? If it's a hard woman or a hard man? Criticism. You get criticism. All the things you haven't done, all the things that are terrible about you, all the different carpings and complaints and all the different things, and you hear you've knocked yourself out doing, whether it's children, job, whatever it is you're, and you come home and the person you live with is carping and critical. You're living with a hard man. Are you living with a hard man? Do you have a son who's a hard man, who just notices everything and is very critical of his mother, of his dad? What about your own natural father, your own natural mother? Sometimes people tell me that they could never do anything right, or at least they felt they could never do anything right. Do you know a hard man, a hard woman? Well, no wonder that this fellow in the parable, believing that he's dealing with a hard man, is afraid of the judgment, and he hides his little measly talent. Now, this is crucial, because many people see God as a hard man. This is why people often don't really say what's going on. The reason people don't say what's going on to you is because they're afraid you'll judge them. And that's just true. Everybody here has something going on, some issue, and you're afraid of what you'll be thought. Of course you are. I'm just with you. And it's a rare person who's not a hard man in your mind, and that's the person that you'll walk a mile, 500 miles for. Now, there's a friend of ours in New York. He's a very attractive, a very successful man in the banking business. And he's been very interested in some things that I've written on the internet recently about brokenness. And he said this in his email this week. He said, "You know, despite the way everything looks, Paul, I identified with the need to be broken before change happens. I have to say that this has been my experience," and I'm reading from his email, which came in early in the week. "It's a matter of our hearts and what is going on in the innermost places of our hearts, and I guess my heart has needed to be unequivocally broken before change happens. Often those who look the best are the most broken." Now, why are we hiding out, even with the ones we love? Why? Because we're living with a hard man. We're living with a hard woman. And ultimately, it's because we think we're mistaken about God. Now notice that God didn't challenge the man's view of him as enigmatic. You see, if we didn't have Christ, we would all be, in a way, agnostic deists, because the ways of God in the world, they are God's ways and not man's ways. And there's not a person here that can ever figure out what God is doing. But because of Christ, the Christness of God shows us that despite all the questions, we're not dealing with a hard man. Now, let me take a pause. I'm gonna give you another illustration, and then I'm going to be done. There's a man that was real news to me a couple weeks ago, and I found out about him. He was named William Henry Heckler, and he was a Church of England sort of evangelical clergyman in the 1890s. Now, I didn't know that he was the best friend of an extremely important person in the history of the world. This man, William Henry Heckler, was the best friend of Theodore Herzl. Theodore Herzl was the George Washington of the State of Israel. He was the man who founded what today is called Zionism. Theodore Herzl is the great George Washington figure in the history of the State of Israel. Herzl, who was a very, very millenarian evangelical Church of England clergyman, became Heckler's best friend. And he was very, very friendly to Jewish thinkers throughout Europe before the First World War. He was the only man who prophesied the Holocaust and got the year right. Fascinating. But Heckler went to meet with Martin Buber. I know this is a lot of information, but just bear with me. William Henry Heckler went to meet with a Jewish theologian named Martin Buber in 1914, just before the outbreak of the First World War. Heckler, on the way to the train in Berlin, turned to Buber, the very skeptical Jewish philosopher, put his hand on his shoulder, and said this, "Martin, do you believe in God?" Martin Buber didn't know what he thought, but he was shocked by the question. Heckler left. Buber went back to the exact place where he stood as he heard the question. And this is what he wrote. This is Martin Buber. "Do I believe in God? Well, if to believe in God means to be able to talk about him in the third person, then I do not believe in God. If to believe in God means to be able to talk to him, then I believe in God. The God," this is the final part of Buber's quote, he wrote it in his journal, "the God to whom Daniel prayed in his suffering is my God." Now that is very powerful. This question from a Looney Tunes Church of England clergyman, God's anointed messenger, forced Buber to think about God. Is God a hard man? Or, you know, the God of the philosophers? Or is God the one of compassion? I'm the poor fellow with the single talent. And Buber said, "The God to whom Daniel prays in his suffering is my God, and that God only." Now, who is the servant with the one talent? It's you. Because even though you may have many talents in different areas, there is one area of your life where you got the short end of the stick. You married unwisely. You may have had everything else going for you, but you married unwisely, and you got the short end of the stick. One of your children is very sick, and despite all the other things in your life that may seem great, there is one thing in which you got the short end of the stick. Your ship has never come in your vocation. You've never gotten the job which was really right. And you have been a square peg in a round hole, even though you've done okay from certain points of view. You're a one-talent man in one area because you got the short end of the stick. Now, what are you going to do about that? It's consuming you. It causes what I've talked about earlier as bitterness, and it will come home to haunt you in your 60s if it hasn't already done so. And what we learn, the reason we are so betrayed by the one talent as compared to her who got them all, or him who has Tim, is that God is a hard man in the face of our one pathetic little bitter talent. And I'm here to tell you that he is the one who said, "Come unto me, and I will in no wise cast you out." He said, perfect love, the non-hard manness of God, casteth out fear. If you're a one-talent Joe in one area, or two or three, you've hidden your talent because you're so terribly afraid of criticism. And God is the opposite of a hard man. Now I'm going to say a prayer. If you have any sense of having been dealt a single talent when somebody else got them all, I'd like you to kneel with me as I say a prayer. Let us pray. Our Father, it's the bitterness and it's the disappointment of having been dealt one talent that is the rub. And in the light of all that we think you are, we are stultified and paralyzed in the middle of this situation. Now you reassure us that although you do what you're going to do, you are not a hard man. I ask you to posit yourself and put yourself right by our little burial ground of our bitter little talent, and reassure us again that you only have our good and our hope, and help us to unbury the talent, small as it is, today, for Jesus' sake. Amen.